Hey there, guys and gals, Hepcats, cool kittens, friends and foes, you diesel-powered disciples of cool joining us. It is, once again, time for the Diesel Punk Podcast. I am your co-host, Big Daddy Cool, John Pica, and along with me is the professor, the diesel pope, boss, Larry Amyet, all the way from Dallas-Fort Worth, via the magic of the interwebs. How you doing, Larry?
Doing great, Johnny. Great to be here. Good to see you again.
Yeah. So for our viewers, we don't know who's going to be joining us tonight. Everyone on the crew was invited, but, you know, not everyone's going to be with us every week. So we may have some people popping in as we go. I'm looking at you, Teresa. as they do pop in, we'll introduce them. And if you guys don't know what you're watching, this is the Diesel Punk Podcast, where Larry Amyet and I talk about all things diesel punk and sometimes not so diesel punk.
Right.
We sometimes get off on a little bit of a tangent, and that's okay. But as you guys are watching, please post comments, and we'll address them as we're able as they pop up. And sometimes our viewers will lead us off on a tangent. And just for our viewers and listeners, I reactivated my social media accounts today just so we could share this video on Facebook. And our Facebook fans can watch. Larry, I had to deactivate my social media. It got way too divisive and way too hateful for me. I just couldn't take it anymore.
I mean, it's been real stressful. There's been times I've looked at it and go, okay, you know, I don't want the, even my friends that I share opinions with.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's, you know, let me see the cat videos. You know, I posted, show me a picture of your dogs. You know, let me see your puppy dogs. You know, and that's even among my friends who I agree with, you know,
yeah,
politically. And so, yeah, I know what you mean. And it we spend too much time on social media, and they've shown it's not necessarily good for people.
Yeah, there's a great documentary on Netflix called The Social Dilemma. And if you've not seen it, it will, like, open your eyes to just how much social media manipulates us. It's crazy. So anyway, you know, I had to get off social media for a while, and I'm not going to put it on my phone. I'm going to avoid it at all costs and only use it to share things with fans and with, you know, viewers so that they can be up to date. Now, for everyone who is joining us, if you did not hear the last episode, I shared with the group and with everybody that I had been a survivor of COVID. September 25th, man, started a 18 day actually, because I didn't actually get quarantined until the 28th. And I was in quarantine for 15 days after that, and then one extra day to go to the doctors and get, you know, letters to return to work and all that. And the very next, I think it was the very next Monday. No, it was two Mondays after that. It was the Monday after I got out of quarantine. We were on the air with you and I and with Teresa Lott and Tony Snipes. And I was feeling good. I was feeling really good. That Friday, after we did that show, I woke up and called the doctor, and they sent me into the ER, and I ended up being hospitalized for 3 days with blood clots in my lungs. You know, they hooked me up to oxygen, had IV in my arm, and, you know, waking me up every hour to give me drugs or to do tests, and had me on a heart monitor. I mean, it was awful. I'd never been in the hospital before, Larry.
Oh, Okay.
Not since I was a little kid, and I don't remember it. I was in the hospital to have my tonsils removed.
Oh.
And all I remember is ice cream. So this was like a whole new experience for me. And I was just like, I got a little bit cranky. Mm. I got a little bit terse with one of the nurses one morning, but, they finally let me go and sent me home with a portable oxygen tank, and I'm taking blood thinners. But, you know, the doctor said, look, if you hadn't come in today, you probably would have died. It was that close.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't feel, I felt like when I was in quarantine, I was going to die. But, you know, I just couldn't breathe. And he said, no, this, if you hadn't come in today, this would have taken a turn really badly for you. So I'll tell you what happened in that process, Larry.
Okay.
This, I'm just sharing this with our viewers to kind of bring them up to speed. It really caused me to reorient and to reorder my priorities in life. You know, I've been performing professionally on stage in some form or fashion for 30 years, doing 3-4 nights a week, sometimes more, almost every weekend. And, you know, I look back on 30 years of all of the missed vacations and missed birthdays and, the friends who don't call me anymore or invite me to anything because I always had to say, oh, I'm sorry, I'd love to be there, but I got a show. Mm. And, performing used to be like oxygen for me. And now I have no desire to get on stage in front of strangers ever again.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if that'll change or not, but for the time being, I've canceled everything. I've got a couple of ghost tours that I'm training some new people. And once they're on board and active, I'm stepping back. And going to focus on podcasting and writing. And that's pretty much it.
Okay.
So I never have to pass up that invitation from you ever again. So I can fly out to Dallas at a moment's notice, Larry.
Hey, that's a plan, man. We got to do that.
Yeah.
Once we all open up and we can go somewhere and have some fun.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, as we sit here on November 16th, 2020, they're shutting everything down again across the country. Yeah. And who would have thought, man?
I know.
And isn't it weird? Is it weird to you that it's like almost exactly 100 years since we went through this the first time? Or the last time, I guess?
Sure. Yeah, it's amazing. Well, I know scientists have been saying for a good 20-plus years that we were overdue for a 1911-level epidemic. You know, we were overdue for it. And so it was just a matter of time. But like you said, almost exactly 100 years.
Yeah, since the Spanish flu.
1918 to 1919.
Yeah.
And here we are, 2020.
So weird, man. And you know, in some ways, I'm looking at the calendar going, how is it already November? But then at other times, I'm like, is this year ever going to end? It feels like this is the year that doesn't end.
Yeah, right.
It goes on and on, my friend.
It's Groundhog Day over and over and over.
But we got good news from Moderna today. Did you hear the news?
Yes. And my wife told me it was like 94-95% effective.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be refrigerated.
Well, not at the same temperature as the Pfizer. Vaccine, because the Pfizer one has to be refrigerated at like negative 100 degrees Celsius. And this one,
unreal.
Normal refrigeration will keep it preserved.
in some small communities, their hospitals don't have the resources, don't have the technology that you know, a big city like Nashville or Dallas has the technology. But you go out in the small, you know, Wyoming, North Dakota, the small communities out there, and many of them don't have that technology.
That's right. That's right.
So yeah, it's great progress. It's a good thing.
Well, we are not here to talk about COVID or our COVID-related trials. We are here to talk about something much more fun and exciting, the fantastic world of Dieselpunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, Larry, we've done this over and over throughout the years, but every time I think that we're getting the message out, I'm reminded that there's new people coming into our community every day who they're either trying to figure out this Dieselpunk thing or they're flat out asking, what is Dieselpunk? And so I think we, as the voice of Dieselpunk, have a responsibility to you know, recap kind of the tenets of Dieselpunk, do that Dieselpunk 101 every once in a while, and share with our viewers and our listeners exactly what is Dieselpunk. And you and I are pretty much on the same page. We have a couple of varying, you know, variances, but nothing to split hairs over. And so I thought I'd turn it over to you and let you chat a little bit about your view of what Dieselpunk is and maybe what it is not.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. Really, you know, we've always kind of looked at it as there being three main elements that distinguishes Dieselpunk. There's a term that's unique to Dieselpunk. Decadence is one of the elements, which is, you know, it's a fusion of two words, Art Deco and decadence. And what we mean by that is it's an abundance of the Jazz Age style and sensibility. We all know the tropes. We all know the generic symbols when we see it. The gangsters, the flappers, the cars, the biplanes, the, you know, the streamlined trains, the jazz music, big band. We know the tropes. World War II, World War I, the Great Depression, all these elements, we see it when we know it. So yeah, that's the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And maybe you could go into the 50s, because, you know, you made a very good point that it really does hang on deep. We include the American Standards and the Rat Pack stretched way into the 50s, even early 60s. So you have that sense there. And what, you know, we talked about movies like Lovecraft Country, which actually takes place in mid to late 50s. So decadence, that is to sense the feel of the Jazz Age, which means it doesn't have to be in this Jazz Age. It could be later, but has that feel to it. I always like to emphasize contemporary. Now, there's some disagreements as to what that means. I don't include Metropolis as Dieselpunk, but as proto-Dieselpunk. It inspired what became Dieselpunk.
Well, oh, so yeah, so it, oh, inspired is what you said. I thought you said expired.
No, no, it inspired.
Yeah, it was the inspiration.
It was the inspiration. Thank you. Yes, it inspired Dieselpunk. We see Metropolis imagery in, let's say, Blade Runner, which inspired the look of Blade Runner. And so anything after the Diesel era would be contemporary. Man in the High Castle.
The actual historic era.
Historic, thank you.
So,
yeah.
Created so, after, whether you set that at the end of World War II or at, like I do, with the launch of Sputnik, it would be anything created after that historic era that has the decadence, that we're, the style and aesthetics that we're talking about.
Right. And maybe this is a good time to talk about, you know, when does it include? What time frames does it include? You pointed out that in your time frame, you feel like it goes up to Sputnik. And there's a lot, is a good case to be made with that. Lovecraft Country was so full of decadence that it really drove home the point that, yeah, and anytime you deal with Rat Pack or stuff like that, you get into that. But then again, I know some, Tom Wilson, one of the founding fathers, places it at Hiroshima, okay? The
right,
first
the
use of the atomic bomb. So he places it there. I lean towards Korea, the Korean War, which started up in 50s and powered up and wrapped up around 54.
Right.
And I have a variety of reasons that I do that. The beginning of the peacetime nuclear technology, the end of the Golden Age of radio and the arrival of the Golden Age of television, that kind of stuff. But that's where I cut it off. And then there's the hind end of that. When do you start? I place it in World War One or around the end of World War One. I think you once went as far back as Titanic. If I'm remembering right,
well,
Johnny.
I set the end of the steampunk era with the sink of the Titanic.
Okay.
But I don't actually start the official diesel era until the start of World War One.
Oh, okay. I'm with
and
you.
That period in between has some overlap and bleed through, and you know, steam's phasing out. The diesel era is phasing in, but then, you know, World War One is the start for me.
Yeah, I borrow from the time. I call it no man's land. Borrow from that time because both steampunk and dieselpunk can claim World War One because there's such a strong overlap. Steam still dominated, especially in the early days. It still dominated it, but at the end, though, we had great advances in internal combustion. We had great advances in air craft, great advances in tanks and machine guns, and the technology and the social movements that came out of that. So I'm like you. I kind of fuzz in. I think there's not a solid line. I think it's a fuzzy line on both sides.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's contemporary. As for, you know, that meaning that it happens after. That can therefore include Man in the High Castle of the early 60s, the novel. It can include late 60s television shows and so forth. Now, then comes punk, and that's a fuzzy term. And it has different meanings. Huh?
And it's morphed and evolved over the last 10 years.
Oh, it's morphed and evolved from its very inception back in the 1700s, which was actually a Native American term. And then Shakespeare picked it up and described it as a gaudy prostitute, which is the first use in English. Yeah, it's in one of the Shakespeare's plays where he described a gaudy prostitute as being punk. And that's how the first introduction in English of the word. So it always from the very beginning had this unacceptable outside counter ethics, counter culture theme from the very beginning. Even Native Americans, it was, some of them used it different ways, but it meant in one just tinder, and then for just to, you know, for lighting fires with, useless word for that purpose, or corn on the cob that had been cooked down and then crushed up into a meal paste to make into food, which, by the way, colonials, white people thought that was absolutely horrible tasting. They said it was horrible. But, you know, they didn't let anything go to waste. So,
well, I don't know. Cornbread is about the best thing I've ever had.
Yeah. I've just never had crushed up burnt corn cobs. I kind of imagine it being kind of like burnt popcorn. And some people love burnt popcorn. And so anyway, then over time it evolved to mean again, for lighting cigarettes, as useless pieces of paper or wood for lighting cigarettes. Then it finally got associated with rowdy mobs, and then the young punk, you know, as a hoodlum during the 50s, and then the countercultural punk movement of the 70s picked it up as a symbol of pride. And now, like you said, it's evolved into wide number of meanings. To punk somebody is to fool them, to be punked. So it has a variety of meanings now. Steampunks mean it to represent science fiction, Victorian science fiction. We take it to mean more a wide range of subjects. Retrofuturism is punk because it's a past or future that never happened. Alternate history, a same thing, never happened. And counterculture, the anti-hero. I include the anti-hero in a lot of my diesel punk. Chicago is all about the play, and the movie is all about the anti-hero. Boardwalk Empire was praise of the anti-hero.
Man in the High Castle to a large degree.
But the recent, you know, Fargo,
yeah,
is almost exclusively with just small characters, mostly about, it's a lot like Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
It's about the criminals and syndicate, and you're really, you know, you're rooting for one over the other, and you hate to see a mobster die. It's like, oh no, they killed off, you know. And
no spoiler,
a lot, by the way, on Fargo.
No spoilers. I'm only on episode 4.
Okay, you're only on episode 4. Oh man.
Well, I got sidetracked.
Well, yeah, you had some other things on your mind. So anyway, that's punk. So take those elements, put them together, and you have what we call diesel punk.
Now, Larry, a lot of people don't understand, though, why it's diesel when there's so much of an emphasis on Art Deco.
That's great. Oh, wow, I hadn't thought about that. Okay, it gets back to the how genre punk came about. Genre punk during the early days was originally cyberpunk. That's the granddaddy of them all. Cyber being, well, what we're doing right now. You know, talking over the interwebs. That's cyber. And punk, well, kind of became what we today call hackers. And that's what the early cyberpunk was about, was in many ways what today we now call hackers, or anonymous would be in many ways a cyberpunk. Then came several novels where they set the storylines in Victorian era, and the authors who had actually been cyberpunk authors to start with described them as, well, we could call it steampunk because it's cyberpunk set in the Victorian era. And then came Children of the Sun, which was a role-playing game set during the 20s and 30s era. And he said, the creator said, well, it's diesel punk. It's like steampunk, but dirtier and grittier. And that formed the word diesel. So genre punk always tends to base its terminology on the main modes of production, power. Deco is one facet of diesel punk. It emphasizes the aesthetics of that were especially popular in the 20s and some of the 30s. So by the 30s, it became modern. But diesel punk accompanies all of that, including World War II and the war tech on both sides, that doesn't necessarily have a deco sense to it. And that's why Diesel Punk is more, it's larger deco punk. It exists and it's growing as a movement, but I still think it's a subclass of Diesel, well, because it falls with the era.
In our interview that Eric Fisk and I did with Mr. Piecraft a year or two ago, he agreed with my theory that, you know, when Diesel Punk was first established, you know, 10 years ago when we started this podcast, it still was largely based on fuel, diesel fuel. But over the last several years, that movement of deco punk really has informed Diesel Punk as a whole, and it's shifted from that fuel-based technology to more of an aesthetic-based genre, you know, really focusing more on style and aesthetic. And I think we see that in a lot of the newer Diesel Punk stuff coming out. You know, back in the day, people said Mad Max is Diesel Punk, and there was some agreement to that up until the last few years, and most people now in the community reject Mad Max as Diesel Punk, and they call it what it is, you know, post-apocalyptic or post-apocalyptic punk, which I'm cool with. But like when we watch Man in the High Castle, which, as you pointed out, is set in the 60s, but it's a great example of Diesel Punk outside the Diesel era.
Right.
Because it's past the actual historic era that we look to, but the style and aesthetics stopped at the end of World War II. And everything is based on those, that style and aesthetics into Nazi-occupied America and Japan-occupied West Coast. And, you know, that's, I think that's become kind of a hallmark of a lot of Diesel Punk properties. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And I have no problem. Again, I think deco punk is, well, one, I love it myself. I think it's fantastic.
I think it's kind of what you and I both gravitate towards naturally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm always kind of a, more and more thinking myself as a dark diesel, dark deco, kind of person. And, although I'm getting a little bit more gothic deco as I go along now. And I mean, I always talked about, you know, I love the Dirty 30s and FDR and the whole time frame. I think that's fantastic. Although I can easily get into the 20s, you know, and there's some grittiness in the 20s. I love jazz and blues and the classic jazz and blues, which we're going to talk about some of that here in a minute.
Yeah.
So I love that. So, and that's very 20s. And of course, you know, gangsters are so much a part. Gangsters and flappers and Great Gatsby look and all that. I think it's a great, powerful trend, and I'm happy to see deco punk, and I'm happy to see it gaining. I would kind of wish that they would say, yeah, we are diesel punk, and it's okay to say we're deco punk.
Yeah.
It's saying, I prefer, you know, it's like, we all like ice cream, but some people like vanilla, some people like chocolate.
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah.
And I interchange the terms depending on who I'm talking to, you know, because some people instantly, I get a sense that they're going to instantly respond to deco punk and understand what that means. And then sometimes, you know, it's diesel. And it just kind of depends on who I'm talking to. But, hey, we got a couple of comments here from Blake Wilson. He says, woo, much diesel love to you all. And he makes an interesting point. So Blake loves what he calls cassette futurism. And he kind of describes it as a proto version of cyberpunk. Kind of the way, you know, we have deco and atom punk on the ends of our bookends on the end of our genre.
Right. If you look at some of the sci-fi of the 70s, that makes me think of the sci-fi of the 70s when he says cassette punk futurism. Because, you know, that was, you know, we had cassettes during the 70s, especially 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And you look at movies like Brainstorm and other movies that, you know, War Games.
Well, and even for that matter, what was the horror movie? Reanimator.
Oh, I love Reanimator.
That is full of that,
yeah,
80s cassette futurism aesthetic.
It is. Very neat. Yeah, that's very cool. I, you know, neat. I like that.
Now, here's the question of the night, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
When we started doing this podcast, not only was Mad Max on the list of diesel punk movies, but so was Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we have, as a genre, evolved, the less, right, I tend to include Blade Runner on that list of movies. I love it. And aesthetically, it's got a lot of deco dents.
Yes, but it does.
I think it's really more of a cyberpunk
movie. It's always been classified as cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Now, I've written some blog posts about it. I had one long, in my early days of blog posting, I wrote a long blog post about why it was diesel and not cyber. One reason it was classified as cyber is because, well, there was nothing called diesel punk when it came out.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, yeah.
Cyberpunk was new. It kind of set the style for cyberpunk. So it was the only genre punk, really, when it came out. Even steampunk was in its infancy at that time. And we know that diesel punk isn't that old. It only dates back to 1996. Oh, no. I mean, the game was Children of the Sun was like 2001.
Oh, really? That late?
And so was, yeah,
96.
Right. So, no. 2001, the two games that came out in the time, one of them being Children of the Sun, that's not the only game, but that was the most famous one that coined the term. Because diesel punk actually was coined on both in Europe and in America.
And there's some controversy about this.
Oh, really?
Because was it coined by Pollock or was it coined by Anders Blix?
There's no controversy. The answer is yes. Both. Independently of, okay, each other. Because I've spoke with Anders Blix.
Yeah.
I've interviewed him.
Yeah.
Right. He did it. It was just one of those things where, obviously, you know, it's kind of like when the telephone was invented by two different people, the airplane, you know, there's always this argument, who invented that, really? Did the Wright brothers really invent the airplane? You know, who, or what about the telephone? There's all this controversy about how things arise at the same time. It seems to be something in the cultural milieu of that time that makes that ripe for it. And it seems to be that was a ripe time for diesel punk. Two games, unrelated, in which both individuals used the term diesel punk. One in Europe, one in America. The European, you know, Anders Blix was a small game, limited distribution. And so he didn't get the credit. It's kind of like radio. If you ever watched documentaries about the invention of radio, there's multiple men that claim father to be the one inventors of radio, and I think it's the same thing. So I graded them both. So with that being said, where were we on that? I lost my train of thought. So what were we talking about? We were talking about Blade Runner.
Yeah,
Blade Runner.
When did Blade Runner still consider it? Was that 84?
Yeah, that sounds right. It was mid 80s. And you can tell by looking at it, it has a strong 80s vibe to it. But, I mean, we talked about how Metropolis inspired the look of it. The theatrical release had the voiceover, the noir voice, which was horrible. That was inserted by the studio because they thought people were too stupid to get the storyline without it. There's so much decadence. It's really not about technology. It's about robots. It's about, if anything, you could call it biopunk, because the androids were, the replicants were biological. Like they said, we're not computers, Sebastian. We're physical.
Well, yeah, I
can quote the lyrics from, I can quote the script.
Well, and in the sequel, they took that whole idea, you know, hey, we are real flesh and blood people. We are not androids. And
I think the sequel is going to, I think we're going to look back on the sequel. It didn't make it really at the theater, but I think it's going to be over time. It will be recognized.
I like 2049 better than the original Blade Runner. And there were a lot of reasons why. And the biggest reason was the sound design on that movie was just so good. There was a lot to love about 2049. But Blake Wilson says, Cyberpunk had Shadow Run on Nintendo Entertainment System in 1993. It was a concept without a name at the time. I don't know that I agree with that, Larry. Cyberpunk was
already
before 1993.
Neuromancer was long out. And that's probably one of the great daddies of Cyberpunk was Neuromancer. Again, like I said, steampunk came after the birth of cyberpunk, and they applied the name retro back to steampunk. So no, I hear what he's saying. I think it was, but I'm not sure it was a valid name at the time. I think on that detail, I have to differ with Blake on that one. Yeah, we can document. Yeah, we can I think it's well documented. There's some books. I have a few of them about cyberpunk and its origins. So,
well, very cool. Any I'd love to have some comments from our viewers. We've only got a few people watching, but please, if you have a comment or a question about what is or isn't Dieselpunk, please feel free to ask and we'll address it. We'll answer those questions and talk about it. But while we're doing that, Larry, you brought to my attention two properties I had no clue about on Netflix. Now, are both of these already available or are they, they're coming soon?
They're coming soon.
Talk about May first.
Oh, let's talk about May. Oh, May.
No,
okay.
Mank.
Let's talk about Mank. Well, that's a great movie anyway. Okay. Mank, I'm getting my notes in front of me here. Okay, Mank's going to be coming out. It's already been released in a limited release. So when I said no, that wasn't quite accurate. There was a limited release on the 13th of Mank. And Mank is it biographical? I don't know. It claims to be. It involves the great Diesel era movie, some say the greatest American movie of all time, Citizen Kane, with Orson Welles. And it's about the making of Orson Welles, specifically a man that by the name of Herman J. Mankiewicz. That's the where we get the name Mank, who has there's been claims by him and by others that he was the one that wrote Citizen Kane and not Orson Welles. And this kind of goes with that theme about, you know, him taking credit for writing the movie. And what was his involvement, really, in the script? The lead actor, Mank, is played by the great Gary Oldman.
It's worth seeing the movie just to see him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know,
I saw a shot of the actor playing Orson Welles, and I don't know who it is, but he's the spitting image.
He looks just like him.
Yeah.
He looks just like him. Of course, Gary Oldman was won an Oscar for The Darkest Hour.
Yeah.
Where he played Churchill. And so it's amazing how, and I know some of his makeup, but how he really does morph his look. He's gotten more and more in the last few years where he really changes how he looks. But it's already won some high praise. And it's supposed to be released on, let's see, I should have a date here, December 4th on Netflix.
Okay.
So I think this whole limited theatrical release is the, I want to call it a stunt, that Netflix is pulling so that they can get into the Oscars. Oh. You know, there's been some, you know, there's been controversy because they've done this before.
Right.
Release a movie in limited release to the theaters, and then they come back and say, oh, we should get be in the Oscars because we were released to the theaters and not just to television.
Well,
a small screen.
Well, the Oscars are recognizing Netflix and streaming releases now. So, you know, I don't know why they would feel the need to do that as a stunt. Maybe Netflix just hasn't gotten the memo. I don't know. But you remember when Shape of Water came out. You remember how insane I got over that? It had been released in limited run, but not in Nashville. And it was driving me crazy. I was going to have to drive like 3 hours away to be able to see that when it first released. And that's why they did that. It was to make the Oscar deadline. Drives me nuts.
That's interesting. See, I'm lucky. Here in Dallas, we have so many, we have several art theaters.
Yeah.
So when these independent productions come in, we get them even in limited releases like that. And plus, I have several art theaters. In fact, I got Iron Sky in Dallas when nobody else was showing it back when it first came out.
I know.
Me and the local Diesel Punks got it. We petitioned a local theater to show it, and they said, okay. And
I did everything I could to petition our local theaters in Nashville. No one was interested. It drove me crazy.
Yeah. Let's hear it for Texas Theater.
We have one kind of art theater, and then we have two theaters that will run some independent films. But, yeah, maybe Dallas might be the place. So, Mank, is it – I read a little blurb on it. I watched the trailer, and, you know – it does have that feeling of this is the untold story of Citizen Kane's creation.
Right.
So maybe it's alt history?
It depends on who you talk to.
Yeah.
If you're a defender of Mank, if you think he is the real genius behind Citizen Kane and not Orson Welles, then no, it's not alternate history. It's real history. If you believe the classic view that Orson Welles was the genius behind Citizen Kane, then yeah, it is alternate history.
And that makes it punk instead of just period.
Well, yeah, I mean the cinematography is going to be really interesting. It's shot in black and white.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And that's going to have a fun spin to it. And it looks good. It looks black and white. You know, some black and white doesn't have an authentic feel to it. This has an authentic feel of black and
white. When I watched the trailer, it had a very similar stylistic feel as The Artist.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're already giving it high praise. Some have even said that it's already a classic. I think, who was it? Variety is already calling it a classic.
Well, I'll be interested to see it. That's my birthday weekend, Friday after my birthday. So maybe I'll get to watch it that weekend. I'm a huge Orson Welles fan. Orson Welles informed a lot of my performance material over the years. And, you know, one of my favorite movies in recent years was Orson Welles and Me.
Did you? Oh yeah, that was good. Yes, that's a good movie.
Yeah, it was so good and so underrated. And you know, it just everything that Orson Welles touched seemed to turn to gold. He was just one of those Renaissance men that we just don't have anymore.
No.
And I'll be interested to see this movie because it's so easy to believe that Orson Welles was completely responsible for Citizen Kane because he was that kind of creative genius.
Right.
So, you know, when he said, yeah, this is my masterpiece, I don't think anyone batted an eye.
No.
But now...
But he also was a little... It's kind of like Edison in some ways. You know, Edison was a genius. And he did create and invent wonderful, wonderful inventions in the modern world, pretty much. But, you know, he did steal some as well. We know that. And he bullied competition. And, you know, what he did to Tesla. You know, even with great minds, Orson Welles, he had an ego bigger than his gene. He was genius and ego, and he was pretty cutthroat. And
he knew he was dealings. A genius. He wasn't afraid to let you know that he knew.
Right, I agree. He wasn't afraid to let you know. I noticed we have a new comment, by the way.
Joe Dog McKeel, who is the organizer of HoloCon and the host of another video podcast called Stupid O'Clock that runs on Thursdays and Saturdays. He asks, is Dieselpunk and Petrolpunk the same? And my initial reaction is no.
But like that there's a term called Petrolpunk. I think that's intriguing.
Yeah, it's kind of come along in recent years among, you know, the people who like the diesel fuel element of dieselpunk.
Right.
Almost like the originalists, if you were.
Well, yeah.
And those people, the petrolpunk people, are the ones who tend to include Mad Max.
I was thinking the same thing. That's the perfect classification for Mad Max.
Yeah,
and the whole Mad Max genre and all the spinoffs. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say, no, it's not the same, but it is related as kind of like a side branch of the family tree, of the retro punk family tree. And Mad Max, I would consider petrolpunk.
I'm cool.
Robbie Starr says, I'm a detective that travels through portals to get through to other timelines, and I also hunt down Innsmouth humanoids. Dude, we need to party with you.
Hey, man, who are you going to call?
To the max.
That's great. That's great.
So, Robbie, you know what? You need to check out our sponsor. Before we get to Ma Rainey, Larry, we have a sponsor that we need to acknowledge. So sit back and enjoy this commercial from our sponsor, the League of Impossibilists. How about that?
How about that? That's fantastic.
So
I love it.
This is the cosplay group that I created with Blake Wilson and Crystal Raven and Greg Jones and some other people have come on board. And Doug Oller, one of my friends, and he also cosplays some of the villains, was like, we need to do a comic book based on this. And so he started drawing it and kind of plotting it. And I do the inks and create the script. It's kind of backwards because he drew the panels with a vague idea of what the story should be. And I take what he created and actually create dialogue and a script to turn it into a story, which is really backwards, but it works for us. So Robbie Scar says, that's cool. Yeah, we're time traveling paranormal heroes defending the space-time continuum against the supernatural threats of evil. And we're very much a fusion. We've got some steampunk characters, some dieselpunk characters, some post-apocalyptic characters, and Blake Wilson plays a cassette futurism character. And yeah, so Robbie, check that out. It sounds like you would fit right in with the mission of the League of Impossible. So before we say goodnight here, Larry, we got one more movie that we got to cover. And this blew me away because I hadn't heard about it either. I don't know where I've been, but I've missed out on some news, I guess, not being on social media. But the movie is called Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about the legendary blues, queen of the blues.
Right, right. Ma Rainey. Ma Rainey was simply amazing. I mean, there's almost no other way to describe Ma Rainey. She's nicknamed Mother of the Blues, and she really is the mother of the blues. How shall I put it? So the storyline is about an early concert that happened, not concert, but a recording that took place of Ma Rainey's music in the year in 1927. Ma Rainey is played by Viola Davis, the great Viola Davis, and it was the last movie for Chadwick Boseman. He co-stars in it. It was his last movie.
I didn't realize that because listen, that does not look like Viola Davis under all of that makeup and padding. I had no idea that was her.
Mm-hmm. Ain't that something?
Yeah.
And when you watch the previews, you go, wow, because she had a big part to play in several main. Bessie Smith was she tutored Bessie Smith. I realized now who I was seeing when I watched Queen Latifah in Bessie Smith. She gets on a blues singer's bus. And she's basically, you know, she stays with Ma Rainey for a while. And Ma Rainey shows her the ropes. But Ma Rainey had already been so successful, which is pretty amazing for an African-American singer in the 20s, that she had her own bus. She was touring. She was quite successful. Now, of course, the end of vaudeville really hurt her career. But this whole production, this whole movie is really about, my understanding, it's about that one night when she recorded some of her most famous music in 1927. And the challenges she went through and the relationship she had with a trumpeter named Levy, played by Boseman. So it promises to be a great movie, and it's also on Netflix. It's coming out a little later. It's coming out on November. It's also theatrical release sometime this month, according to what I have here. And then it's going to start streaming on Netflix December 18th. Promises to be fantastic.
Well, I'm really interested in it because I'm really not familiar with Ma Rainey. Bessie Smith, yes. Billie Holiday, yes. Ella Fitzgerald, I think, is maybe the greatest female vocalist of the 20th century. But I don't know a whole lot about Ma Rainey. Excuse me, Ma Rainey. So I'm excited to see that. Yeah, I'm excited to see that.
It's going to be fun. I can't wait either. It has just been a fantastic, of all the horrible crap of 2020, for small screen diesel punk.
Oh, we've gotten
this
some
has been
great
a great
stuff.
Year.
Yeah. With Lovecraft Country and with Fargo and what else am I missing?
Perry Mason.
Yeah, I've not gotten into Perry Mason, so. I didn't even know there was a new Perry Mason, so I'll have to let my wife know. She's a Perry
it's
Mason
on HBO.
Fanatic.
It's on HBO.
Oh, well, that kind of explains it.
Yeah.
But even City of Angels was good. And Robbie Scar says Watchmen is diesel punk. And I think where they're dealing with that time period, it's like before the Watchmen movie, before the comic series, you know, their founding, right. Their origins. So I can't comment on that, Robbie, but I'll take a look at it. I don't have HBO, so I've not seen a lot of that stuff.
I've heard talk that some people have considered it diesel punk because of the time frame. And it did have, I believe early on, one of the big events was Tulsa in the 1920s. The ride.
Okay.
So, of course, that's very diesel. Horribly diesel, but it is. I've heard that. I haven't really watched it.
Lovecraft Country deals with the Tulsa riots.
Yes, they did. Oh, amazingly so.
Yeah.
That was so amazing.
Now, this is not necessarily diesel punk, but it's set in the Edwardian era. Mm-hmm. It's set in kind of that fuzzy period that we were talking about. It's a brand new movie on Netflix, a family Christmas movie called Jingle Jangle. Stars Forrest Whitaker, and he is fantastic, but the rest of the cast is amazing. It's a musical, and it's my kind of musical because the color palette is the Crayola 8. So it's got these bright comic book colors, and it is set during the Edwardian period, and it's just a fun movie. It feels like a old warm blanket that you curl up in because it borrows from The Wizard of Oz and Willy Wonka, and it borrows from Mr. Gorham's Wonder Emporium, and it borrows like stylistically from The Greatest Showman and Hamilton. And it's designed to make it feel familiar, not diesel punk per se, but what made me think of that just now is talking about Lovecraft Country. You remember Lovecraft Country was maybe the most beautifully shot TV show I've ever seen. The colors and the contrasts and, you know, every scene was like, just so perfectly lit. Well, this movie, Jingle Jangle, is the same way. It is beautifully lit. And you can tell you're an adult when you're watching movies saying, wow, the lighting's really good in this movie. It becomes more important as we get older.
That's true. You know, the steampunk message boards, listen to me, Facebook pages are calling it steampunk.
Well, there's
already starting to lay claim to it as being.
Well, that was my first feeling as I was watching it. And the very beginning of the movie definitely is in the steam era. And there's a lot of steampunk clockwork stuff going on. But the movie progresses into the Edwardian era when they've got you know, gas powered trucks and automobiles and the style. It's almost like they created Victorian styled zoot suits. It's a mashup. It's a mashup movie, and it's the kind of movie that I love because of that. You know, like Moulin Rouge was this mashup of style and aesthetics and music, and this has and Greatest Showman, Hamilton is the same way, and this movie has that same kind of feeling. So I recommend it. Robbie Star, one last comment, says Doomsday Clock is the sequel. Yes, that's the sequel to The Watchmen, and it's still running almost 3 years later at DC Comics. One more comment. Ugh, steampunk fedoras, step in top hats and bowler hats any day. I'm not sure what that means.
Steampunk fedoras, step in top hats and bowler hats any day.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. I'll take
your word for it, Robbie.
Bowler hats, bowler hats and top hats continued. I mean, that was has been for hundreds of years. Men's style. I saw a guy at the grocery store with a bowler hat. I took my father grocery shopping. Took him grocery shopping Saturday, and we saw a gentleman in a bowler hat at the grocery store.
Yeah, my dad has.
Yeah, and it's a book written titled "The Hat That Won the West," and it's all about the bowler hat.
Well, hey, Billy the Kid wore a bowler.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
Doc Holliday did.
Doc Holliday.
Somebody else did, and I can't think of it. Matt Masterson, I think it was.
Bat Masterson did.
Yeah, that's who it was. Yeah. Anyway.
Robbie says, ugh, steampunk. So he must not be a fan of steampunk. That's okay.
To ease his own.
Yeah, yep. So, Larry, we've been doing this for an hour. So I had some other things that maybe we would get to, but you know what? They can wait. we're going to call it a night. I hope you guys who have watched have enjoyed this. Please share this video with your fans, your friends, your social network. And you can continue to comment even after we go off air. You'll be able to listen to the audio version of this on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and Spotify and even iHeartRadio. Tune in to the audio version. Listen on your way to work. That's what I do. I listen back to our podcast, Larry, and I go, man, that was really good.
Yeah, we've had some great ones over the years. This was good. This was really good.
Yeah, this is a good one. And I always love it when you and I just get to have a conversation, and hope our fans have enjoyed it too. You can support our podcast by becoming a monthly patron at dieselpunkpodcast.com. You can see it on the ticker. It's been scrolling by at the bottom. A couple bucks is all we ask. And it goes solely to improving our product. And how far have we come in the last 10 years, Larry?
Oh, my.
Who would have thought that we would have streaming video branded with commercials? And wait till you see what I have cooking.
Right. That's amazing. It's amazing. Remember, people probably, our listeners that's been listening around probably remember the gremlins that we would have
because we were recording on Soviet era surplus, right? And, it's been good. So for everybody out there, thanks for tuning in and share the broadcast and continue to share your thoughts on our Facebook page or the Facebook group. Wherever you're watching this, and Larry, you wanna give us a sign out?
You know, we opened up talking about COVID, and we just can't get away from it. It's here, and we're going into what some people say the darkest time right now as we get into fall and winter, the flu season, and the vaccine's on its way. but the cavalry's not here yet, and it's going to be a little while before they get to the general populace. So, you know, wear your mask, wash your hands, take care of each other. And sometimes that means, you know, staying apart, because, you know, taking care of each other, that's what life is all about.
Amen, my brother. Well, thanks for a great conversation, Larry, and for everybody else. Till the next time, we'll catch you on the flip side.
Bye.